Hello, أهلاً وسهلاً and welcome to Arab Voices on Houston's Community Station, listener-sponsored commercial-free KPFT 90.1 FM, with live streaming and online archive previous shows at both kpft.org and arabvoices.net. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on other radio stations in different states in the U.S. Today on the show, I will have two segments. First, I will air some of the remarks delivered at the emergency rally held in Houston this week in support of the Palestinian people of Silwan in occupied East Jerusalem and against the Israeli home demolition orders. During the second segment, and in memory of Ramsey Clark, former U.S. Attorney General and longtime human rights lawyer who died in April 2021, I will air an episode from TUC Radio, Ramsey Clark's Appeal for Peace, Stop the War on Iraq, Let Iraq Live. It was a speech he gave in 2002 warning of another war on Iraq. He said when George Bush declared his war on terrorism, he made the most lawless step in the history of the United States. Ramsey Clark warned of another war on Iraq, both for the poor and tortured people of that country and for us, for our own safety and for our souls. In spite of huge peace demonstrations across the world, the war on Iraq began in March 2003. The Israeli occupation continues its ethnic cleansing of Palestine that started over 73 years ago by forcing Palestinians out of their homes and businesses, and demolishing them. In the Al-Bustan area of the occupied East Jerusalem neighborhood of Silwan, Israel started demolishing Palestinian commercial businesses, literally with bulldozers, and ordered several families to demolish their own homes, or Israel will demolish their homes for them, and build them for that. What could top this terrorism? In Houston, Texas, an emergency rally was held on Monday, July 5th, in front of the General Consulate of Israel to protest the Israeli demolitions of Palestinian homes and businesses. Let's listen in to some of the remarks from some of the participants.
Youth Movement Houston chapter, and I want to say why we're gathered here today. What is the purpose of gathering and protesting for Palestine? On June 28th, the Israeli government plans to demolish homes in Silwan, East Jerusalem, and demand to pay for their own homes to be demolished. All to allow Israeli settlers to move in and to create a biblical park in effort to erase the native Palestinian community. In Jerusalem, the Israeli government has a policy of maintaining a solid Jewish majority in the city with a target demographic ratio of 70% Jews to 30 Arabs. Israel artificially creates a Jewish majority in Jerusalem through its violent, systematic acts of ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. The U.S. government gives Israel $3.8 billion in military funding every year, and our tax dollars funds the ethnic cleansing and occupation of Palestine. The U.S. government also blocks all attempts to hold Israel accountable through the United Nations Security Council, and today here, actually, by requesting U.S.-based activism for Palestinian rights, and that's why all these cops are here and wouldn't let us protest here.
We're going to have another speaker this time from PAC USA. We're going to go ahead and have Amo Kamal speak. Everybody give him a great big round of applause.
Hello everyone. Before my speech, I have a message from Silwan. About an hour and a half ago, it is in Arabic though, and whoever can translate, but this is a message that they sent to me and they asked me to read it for you. It's a very short one. It says, أرجو أن تقول, that's me to tell you, أن سلوان لا تنام وأطفالها لا يعرفون النوم من الشعور بعدم الأمان وأن يباغتهم التهجير والاقتلاع إثناء نومهم وقل أيضا أن سلوان الآن في هذه اللحظات تغرق في الغاز السام المسيل للدموع والمياه العادمة وأننا لا نستطيع التنفس. هذا قبل ساعة ونص. آخر أحكامهم في القدس يمنعون أن يتواصل الأخ مع أخيه والأهل مع ابنهم، ويمنعون الزيارات العائلية، وإن أحياء بأكملها تحت رحمة جنازير جرافات الاحتلال العنصري. هاي المسج قبل ساعة ونص من سلوان، من نص سلوان. And if I can translate in short, they asked me to let you know that Silwan does not sleep and their children does not know how to sleep. They cannot sleep because of the feel of unsafety, insecurity, and they are afraid that eviction and uprooting them during their sleep time. And please say and tell everyone that Silwan now is flooded with tear gas and they cannot breathe at this point in time. Their last decisions in Jerusalem, they prevent the communication between brothers, and families cannot see their kids, and they preventing the families visitation, and a whole neighborhood is under the threat of the bulldozers of the Israeli Zionists. That's a simple translation. I hope I did it to the best of my ability. And now to my speech. Hello, everyone. First, I would like to thank you all for being here today. I would like everyone to look at the person next to you and give yourselves a high five. Let's give each other high fives and say, thank you for being here. Good job. And let's keep the pressure on. Our greetings also go to our resilient and beloved people in Al-Aqsa Mosque, Silwan, Sheikh Jarrah, Batn al-Hawa, Hayy al-Bustan, Beta, Kubr Qattum, Na'lin, Ba'lin, and all areas where our people continue confronting with the Israeli illegal occupation. Ladies and gentlemen, no occupation lasted forever, and the Israeli occupation of Palestine will not be an exception. Ladies and gentlemen, the Israeli systematic ethnic cleansing against the indigenous Palestinians and the demolition of their houses in Silwan already has begun. The same threat continues as we speak to all Palestinian neighborhoods in and around Jerusalem. The illegal confiscation and annexation of the Palestinian land also continues. Building illegal colony on occupied land in the West Bank never stopped. Disregarding all international laws, including the Security Council Resolution 2334 of December 23rd of 2016. And I quote, condemning all measures aimed at altering the demographic composition, character and status of the Palestinian territory occupied since 1967, including East Jerusalem, including the construction and expansion of settlements, transfer of Israeli settlers, confiscation of land, demolition of houses, of homes and displacement of Palestinian civilians in violation of international humanitarian law and relevant resolution and end of quote. Therefore, what has been happening in Jerusalem and the West Bank in general is a clear-cut violation of international law. This is absolute violation of human rights according to Geneva Convention of 1949. So we wonder, where is the Security Council? Where is the United Nations? And where are all the countries and organizations that preach all day, all night about freedom, equality, and the human rights? I would rather direct our demands today to where the buck stops, directly to President Joe Biden, and ask him to stop dancing about the issue and around the issue of Palestine. Mr. President, if you really for the two-state solutions, as you say, so you need to do right now, recognize the state of Palestine right now. Mr. President, if you really mean business, and with all the powers and privileges you have at your disposal, you can put an end to the Israeli ethnic cleansing against Palestinians in Jerusalem right now. Wow. Mr. President, if you really believe for peace, if you are really for peace in the Middle East, then demand an immediate end of the siege on Gaza. As the apartheid Israel converted it to the largest open air on earth. And Mr. President, stop funding the occupation. It is a shame that our tax dollars has been for so long misused by providing all kinds of weapons to Israel to kill the Palestinian children under the stupid, baseless excuse that Israel has the right to defend itself. Ladies and gentlemen, moving forward, we should consider every single American leader, local or federal, silent or support Israel as a complicit to the genocide, atrocities, and aggression against Palestine and the Palestinians. Finally, I would like to thank all the participating and supporting groups of this protest, and let me reiterate our sincere belief that with the reciprocal support with all U.S. movements like BLM, that is a must, and a united we stand. Let us all chant together in a loud, united voice, free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
My name is Mohammed Nabulsi, and I'm here with the Palestinian Youth Movement and the Palestinian American Cultural Center in front of the Israeli consulate. We are here today to protest Israel's ongoing ethnic cleansing of Palestinian families and neighborhoods in Jerusalem and across Palestine. Palestinians in Jerusalem have continued to face the threat of forcible evictions and home demolitions backed by the discriminatory, legal, and military systems of the Zionist state. Just this past week, Zionist military forces entered the Jerusalem neighborhood of Silwan with bulldozers prepared to begin their demolition of Palestinian shops and homes. The Zionist state demanded Palestinians to demolish their own homes, threatening to otherwise demolish them and build them for the demolitions. Palestinians defending their homes and shops were met with extreme violence by Israeli occupation forces who used rubber-coated steel bullets, fired tear gas, and brutally attacked Palestinian protesters with batons in an effort to disperse protesters demonstrating against the theft of their homes and their livelihoods. The Israeli occupation forces demolished a Palestinian butcher shop and arrested the owner, marking the beginning of Israel's implementation of its plans to demolish the homes of over 21 Palestinian families in Sinwar. These demolitions are part of a larger Zionist plan to build a Bible-inspired theme park on the land of demolished Palestinian homes and businesses and to increase segregationist Israeli settlements in the area in violation of international law and in opposition to the long-standing U.S. position against such settlements. These policies of ethnic cleansings are not new. In the Jerusalem neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah, over 200 families still face dispossession, four of which have faced imminent forced eviction from their homes, while three more are expected to be evicted in August. Let it be known that their forced expulsion is part of an ongoing effort by the Israeli state to displace Palestinians from occupied Jerusalem and to replace them with illegal Israeli Jewish settlers. At a time when the Palestinian people are rising up against the Zionist injustice and colonization, they've inspired a global solidarity for Palestinian liberation and demonstrated what Palestinian unity can look like, from Sheikh Jarrah to Silwan to Beta to Gaza to Lid to across refugee camps surrounding all of Palestine. So what is Palestinian unity? Palestinian unity is not simply setting aside our differences in the face of a common enemy. That is only one part of it. Palestinian unity must be predicated on us as Palestinians democratically articulating a shared vision for our path towards liberation. It must mean the complete abandonment of Oslo and its framework and its consequences. It must mean that we recenter national liberation as a framework for achieving justice for our people. It must mean that we unify under the banner of a centralized body such as the PLO, and that is capable of carrying forward our struggle. We must reject the geographic and political fragmentation of our people that has been created through Oslo. We must reject security coordination with the Zionist entity. We must affirm our people's right to democratically engage in our struggle and to voice our opposition against the current policies of the Palestinian Authority, which is a product of Oslo. We must reject political assassinations, imprisonment of Palestinian activists, and the violent crackdown on Palestinian protesters by the PA. The weapons of our people should be wielded only against our enemy and must never be against each other. This is the meaning of unity. The Oslo process has failed. Every Palestinian accepts this now. The question is, what is our path forward to dissolving Oslo, its institutions, in service of rebuilding a national liberation movement? The answer again is shared, a shared political program capable of mobilizing Palestinians to confront Zionist occupation and ethnic cleansing. The PA can no longer play the role of a civil administration and security coordination apparatus for the occupation. Our martyrs and prisoners draw from every political current, and they require that we return to our authentic politics that launched our revolution. We must return to popular mass mobilization, the use of multitude of tactics to defend our people and land, and unity around the principles of our struggle, including the principles of justice and dignity, the right of our people to all of Palestine, the right of our refugees to return, the right to live in security and peace, and most importantly, the right to self-defense and confrontation with the occupation. We honor Nizar Banat, who was recently assassinated by the PA security forces. We honor his steadfastness in resisting colonization and internal corruption. We send our condolences to his family and friends. We rise up in support of the call to defy the Oslo framework and demand the future towards collective liberation across all of Palestine and whole and not parts. We honor his legacy and unite with every current in Palestine willing to withhold any engagement with the Zionist entity and to confront the occupation wherever it enters our lands. From Houston to Palestine, we will stand for justice and liberation.
Up next, we have Alex from Students for Justice in Palestine, SJPUH. Welcome, Alex, please.
Free, free, free Palestine!
Free, free, free Palestine!
Free, free, free Palestine!
Free, free, free Palestine!
Hi, marhaba everyone. Thank you for coming out. My name is Alex. I'm an organizer with Students for Justice in Palestine at the University of Houston. And I'm glad that after months of our people in Palestine struggling against compounded Zionist oppression, Zionist colonization and occupation, we come out in the hundreds to show the Houston community that we will not stand for Zionism, for colonization, for imperialism, until the liberation of all peoples. I want to talk a little bit today about what's going on at UH, because while we are out of school, the Zionists keep on working. So who has heard of the IRA definition of, not to give a lecture, but the IRA definition is essentially this really awful resolution that says any criticism of Israel, any iteration of pro-Palestine speech, activism, protest, or Absar Shul on campus is an iteration of anti-Semitism. Boo! Now, what does this mean for us as students? This means two things. One, energy that could be directed on actually protecting Jewish students against the threat of anti-Semitism is redirected to targeting Palestinian, Arab, Muslim students and those that support our liberation. Ooh. But secondly, it prevents us from using the campus, an institution that has historically been used to push progressive causes, for challenging institutional power and institutional injustice. So what we're doing at UH, because we know that this is just the beginning, and we know that we as students must take this political moment and transfer it and channel it into long-term action on campus, we're pursuing a resolution on protection and support for pro-Palestine activism on campus. And what this ensures is that all Palestine speech, action, protest, event, anything which criticizes Israel, which criticizes Zionism as a racist political project and occupation is protected at the University of Houston. That's going to be voted on in 2 days, on July 7th. And right now, we need your support. I know petitions are kind of cringy, but student governments are cringy. And so for this tactic, we got to play into it. So what I have is a petition, astaghfirullah al-azim, and I need everyone to scan the QR code to affirm to our student government that we support the protection of Palestine activism on campus, and that UH will not be like the tens and tens of other universities that forfeit speech on Palestine under Zionist pressure. So I'm gonna walk around and I'm gonna have a QR code and we're gonna make good conversation and you're gonna scan it. And then when fall comes, you're gonna come to the first SJP meeting so we can build a movement on campus for justice in Palestine.
What you just heard were some of the remarks from some of the participants at the emergency rally held on Monday, July 5th, in front of the General Consulate of Israel in Houston, Texas, to protest the Israeli demolitions of Palestinian homes and businesses. We will take a break now, and when we come back, I will air an episode from TUC Radio, Ramsey Clark's appeal for peace, Stop the War on Iraq, Let Iraq Live. It is in memory of Ramsey Clark, former U.S. Attorney General and longtime human rights lawyer, who died in April 2021. It is a speech he gave in 2002 warning of another war on Iraq. We'll be right back.
Now
That was Palestinian singer Dalal Abu Amni with her new song released last week titled We Are Palestinians. You're listening to Arab Voices on Houston's community station, listener-sponsored, commercial-free KPFT 90.1 FM. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Over 18 years ago, in March 2003, the U.S. launched a destructive war on Iraq that has crippled the country, destroyed its infrastructure, and killed over 1 million Iraqis. A war that was based on lies. Lies that Iraq was behind the 9/11 attacks on the U.S. One of the masterminds behind that catastrophic war on Iraq was Donald Rumsfeld, who was Secretary of State at that time, who died last week. Many describe Rumsfeld as a war criminal. To this day, 18 years after that war started, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis continue to suffer from that catastrophic war. Ramsey Clark, former U.S. Attorney General and longtime human rights lawyer, who died in April 2021, was opposed to the war on Iraq. In a speech he gave in 2002, he said, "When George Bush declared his war on terrorism, he made the most lawless step in the history of the United States." Ramsey Clark warned of another war on Iraq, both for the poor and tortured people of that country, and for us, for our own safety and for our souls. In spite of huge peace demonstrations across the world, the war began in March 2003. In memory of Ramsey Clark and on the 18th anniversary of that catastrophic war on Iraq, I will air now an episode from TUC Radio. Ramsey Clark's appeal for peace, stop the war on Iraq, let Iraq live. It is a speech he gave in 2002, warning of another war on Iraq. Let's listen in.
Here's an archival recording by TUC Radio in honor of Ramsey Clark. Former U.S. Attorney General and longtime human rights lawyer Ramsey Clark died on April 10, 2021. After leaving office, Clark became a leading critic of U.S. foreign policy. He said, "The world is the most dangerous place it's ever been because of what our country has done and is doing, and we have to take it back." I recorded him in San Francisco on October 12, 2002. There he warned of another war in Iraq. However, in spite of huge peace demonstrations across the world, Iraq was attacked on March 19, 2003, and a never-ending war began. Here's my archival recording of Ramsey Clark's moving and inspiring speech.
TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Stop the war on Iraq. Let Iraq live. The elder statesman of the anti-war movement, Ramsey Clark, has called for peace for Vietnam, the Philippines, Chiapas, Iraq, and Yugoslavia. With little regard for his personal safety, he has visited the war zones in these countries to discover firsthand the impact of U.S. foreign policy. While the bombs fell on Iraq in 1991, he traveled 2,000 miles by car. On the ground, he visited hospitals and devastated neighborhoods. After the Gulf War, he wrote The Fire This Time, which records the reality of this war and describes the war crimes committed by the military and civilian leaders of the U.S. He now travels across the U.S. to warn us of the consequences of beginning yet another war in Iraq, both for the poor and tortured people of that country and for us, for our own safety and for our own souls. Here is Ramsey Clark, recorded on October 12 in San Francisco. The Blue Angel fighter planes passed over the high school where he spoke in their celebration of military might for Columbus Day 2002. Ramsey Clark.
I'm going to start by going back 510 years when the first Spanish ships touched shore on Hispaniola, and observe some of the developments since then, because I think they tell us, in Lincoln's words, whither we may tend if we don't make a radical change in the government of the United States. The best estimates of the number of Indian peoples on Hispaniola when Columbus arrived were 1,200,000. In 1517, it was estimated that 50,000 had survived. When we look back at Spain, we see without much question what they were about. They were about domination and exploitation. Yet today, when we look at essentially the same thing, we wonder what it's all about. When George Bush announced his war on terrorism, he made the most radical step, and the most dangerous step, and the most lawless step in the history of the United States. And I think clearly it was intended to be the first breaking loose from the end of the Cold War for the outright assertion of U.S. dominion. And now we see an assertion of power, of raw power, that threatens all international law as we know it, and as we have struggled for its development and hoped for its role in the struggle for peace. First, we see the claim that the United States has the power to strike first. It can strike any nation. It can strike a nation because of grievances we have against that nation, or it can strike a nation because we claim that it is harboring terrorists. But who will ever know why it's really decided to strike, from what the United States government says? Since at least 1648 and the treaties of Westphalia, which ended two long wars, one for 100 years and one for 30 years, and established the recognition that each nation is sovereign, and its sovereignty is not to be violated by any other nation, and the sovereignty of each nation is equal to the sovereignty of all other nations. Not to say that the people are equal, but just the nations. And now the United States has proclaimed the right to violate the sovereignty of any nation. It's not that we haven't violated the rights of nations all along, ask the Indian nations, or any nation in the Western Hemisphere. More than 80 violent interventions in the Western Hemisphere in the last 100 years. Hard to believe, but there they are. But now we're proclaiming the right. And we have this stunning power. I mean, we hear those murder machines flying over this peace conference, the Blue Angels. We have to realize there are no angels there. They're just machines that are very expensive, that are designed to kill a lot of people and to enable their domination. When we see something like the vote in the Congress, Who's the greater danger to the people of the planet, including the people of this good country? The United States or Iraq? What have we done to Iraq? We hit Iraq beginning on the 17th of January 1991 with 110,000 aerial sorties. That's a lot of flights. They dropped more than 88,500 tons of bombs. They hit civilian targets up and down the country and from one side to the other. They deliberately targeted every type of facility that's essential to modern societies, and Iraq was a modern society. We destroyed their food in every way we knew how, including insecticide and fertilizer, plants and storage facilities, from the fields to the markets. We killed 150,000 people at least. There's one former Secretary of the Navy who says 200,000 in the bombing. That's a lot of people. We say we lost 155. That's terrible. One-third to friendly fire. The other great lesson was that we are prepared to use technology against life. And technology has the power for total destruction. All this time after the Cold War, which I used to think of as the greatest crime against humanity in history, and it was pretty bad. I mean, it just drained everything toward violence and brought whole continents down. But when you bring that up to date, you see that at this time, with total power, almost, there's not a country we can't destroy. And there's not a country that doesn't know it. And there are countries that we have destroyed, in whole or in part, without setting foot on them, by direct violence and by indirect economic means. And still we have, and it's beyond rationality, 20 Trident II nuclear submarines commissioned. You have to think about things like, what are these ships doing out there? They're as long as the Washington Monument is tall, but they're considerably stouter because they convey 24 missile launch tubes from which they can launch 24 missiles simultaneously. And each can have up to 17 independently targeted maneuverable nuclear warheads. And each can travel up to 7,000 nautical miles. And because it was conceived and built as a first strike weapon to knock out Soviet missiles as or before they emerged from silos, it can hit within 300 feet of a predetermined target, we're told. But we know how that goes. What it means, though, is that we can fire missiles in opposite directions and span 14,000 nautical miles or more than halfway around Mother Earth's ample waste and take out a hemisphere. 408 centers of human population could be hit with warheads 10 times more powerful than the bomb that incinerated Nagasaki, Umbeldi. We have far more nuclear warheads than the rest of the world combined. What are we doing with them? We have far more missiles than the rest of the world combined, and they're far more accurate, far greater range. We have a far greater budget to devise far more destructive, effective, precise weapons of mass destruction. Who's the greater danger to the people of the planet, including the people of this good country? The United States or Iraq? What have we done to Iraq? We hit Iraq beginning on the 17th of January 1991 with 110,000 aerial sorties. That's a lot of flights. They dropped more than 88,500 tons of bombs. They hit civilian targets up and down the country and from one side to the other. They deliberately targeted every type of facility that's essential to modern societies, and Iraq was a modern society. Within hours of the first launch, there was no electricity in the country, except for the few gasoline-powered emergency generators that they had. None for civilian populations, except for a handful of hospitals, about one hospital in three, maybe. Drinking water, running water, safe water, couldn't be found anywhere except from wells. In a city like Baghdad, which has 4.5-5 million people, there are no water wells. We destroyed their food in every way we knew how, including insecticide and fertilizer, plants and storage facilities, from the fields to the markets. We killed 150,000 people at least. There's one former Secretary of the Navy who says 200,000 in the bombing. That's a lot of people. We say we lost 155. That's terrible. One third to friendly fire. One particular one is a family of a young man who was part of a tank unit. And his tank was hit by a silver bullet, depleted uranium tip. This was a state-of-the-art tank, the latest Abrams. Drilled right through, tremendous heat, comes out the other side. Throws minute particles of depleted uranium high into the air and all around. Never can be refined. Blows with the wind. Washed down with the rain. Gets into the food chain. Gets into the water supply. We never asked what effect depleted uranium has on people. We had a new weapon, and we intended to use it. And we concealed it, then we lied about it, and finally it's known that we dropped more than 900 tons of depleted uranium on that country. And when you go to the hospitals, and particularly in the South, and finally, the doctors are pulling together the effect of depleted uranium on the children there. And it is absolutely unbelievable on the whole populations. The number of miscarriages with deformed fetuses, the number of live births with deformed infants, the number of cancers and similar things, deformities. They were having a training program, not in the training hospital, which I know best in Boston, but in the general hospital. They had about 50 people there who were medical team people who were, and they were looking at these photographs, and it was just unbelievable. Every American ought to have to see those and see what we have done. And as bad as all that violence is, it's nothing compared, or it's minor compared to the most genocidal of our acts against Iraq, and those are the sanctions first imposed on Hiroshima Day, August the 6th of 1990. I used to think things like that were just a coincidence, and then I've watched policy long enough to see that this is how government shows It doesn't give a damn about these things, you know. Meeting with the Red Crescent in Baghdad during the bombing, about the 5th or 6th day of February, 2.5 weeks into the bombing by that time. And the Red Crescent is, most of you would know, is the Islamic Nation's equivalent of the Red Cross, and they joined together pretty much in Geneva. And they had particular access to information because they were the sole delivery system for any medications that were coming into the country to outlying hospitals. They had about 7 vehicles and they were taken out there. And the rate of deaths from the sanctions was staggering. It involved many aspects. It involved overwhelmingly children under 5 and infants. Dehydration. You can get pills that will stop dehydration like that in an infant or in a child. And they cost 5 cents if you're buying from a rich pharmaceutical company instead of what they really are worth. But they didn't have any. And mothers were malnourished because they hadn't had enough food since August. They didn't have enough milk. They wanted to feed their baby, so they'd take water and sugar and put it in a bottle and feed the baby, and the water would be bad, and the baby would go. Today, we know from every UN agency that has to deal with food or health or children or anything important in life, what the sanctions have done. UNICEF reported in August of 91 that 47,500 children under the age of 5 could be identified as having died directly from the sanctions. It was a gross understatement, but it showed a recognition. In 1996, Food and Agriculture Organization, which ought to be 100 times what it is because we're facing not only malnutrition among maybe 1.5 billion people at any given time, but we're facing starvation among tens of millions on 3 continents. They reported in 1996, in October, that 585,000 children under the age of 5 have died as a direct result of the sanctions. Now, you think that's a mistake, but then you look at what we're saying and doing now, and you see that's exactly what we mean. Having our way is worth whatever it costs other people. What happens to our character and our conscience if we dare attack Iraq? Where is our humanity? What type of character do we have? There's a story out of Thucydides involving the Peloponnesian Wars in which the little island of Milos, which came under the sway of Athens because it had the fleets, but it had been non-aligned, and that was one thing we couldn't stand. Refused, and it also had trees that were particularly good for masts for ships, and Athens needed the masts and the trees. The Medians refused to submit. The Athenian admiral said, "You don't understand. This is a world in which the powerful do as they will, and the weak suffer as they must." Prevented anything from coming in or out of the island for about 6 months. Then they invaded and they killed the men, killed the young boys. And many historians believe that that was one of the most harmful things in the psyche of the Athenians that led toward their decline from their glorious days. The truth will out. And the truth about what we're doing will out. And the idea that Iraq is a threat to the United States is an absurd falsity, and anyone with common sense would know it. We claim we destroyed 80%. This is the Pentagon. We claim they destroyed 80%. Of course, they were bragging, but of all their capacity to wage war, including any capacity they had to develop weapons of mass destruction. They had a long time to develop weapons of mass destruction by 1991, but if they had developed any, they didn't use them, did they? Wonder why. That was a pretty tough time for them, a little bit serious. Then the UN inspectors claimed, after 8.5 years of intrusion beyond anything any country has ever experienced before, you can go anywhere, anytime, without notice and inspect anything, that they had found 90% of the materials that would be required to develop any type of weapon of mass destruction known to technology at the time, chemical, bacteriological, nuclear. And it would be so obviously and utterly suicidal. We say that they're an evil regime because over the past 20 years they've invaded two peoples, Kuwait and Iran. We backed them in Iran. And look at what the United States has done. Grenada, this menacing island of Grenada with nearly 100,000 people. And pretty soon we had 8,000 soldiers on there. We killed more Grenadians than we lost in World War II in proportion to population in 3 days. They knew people who were lost. They lost members of their family, and they've never had their own country since. We attacked Nicaragua, bombed the harbor, mined the harbor at Corinto, attacked the aircraft landing strips. We were sued in the International Court of Justice, and we said, we're not subject to your jurisdiction. We ticked our briefcases and went home, a lawless society. We attacked Libya, Afghanistan. Afghanistan had known nothing but misery for 50 years, just as the Palestinians have known nothing but misery for 100 years. And the Palestinians and so many others have been addressed with nothing but force and deceit. The whole peace process, to me, has been nothing but force and deceit, forcing them to relinquish land and relinquish rights. Their per capita income is not 1/12 the per capita income of Israel. We give Israel more income per capita in aid than Sub-Saharan Africa has per capita from all sources. And we go on and on like that. The numbers of countries that we have assaulted physically would include Haiti, Iraq, more than 15 when you count them up. Defenseless. We used to think it was not right to shoot a defenseless person. Now we do exactly what Himmler said to the Gestapo. Shoot first, ask questions later, and I will protect you. That's serious, and it's true. And we have to come to grips with it. We have to come home. At this critical time in history, we could stand for peace. We could work for peace. Our country could move for peace. We could change our military budget to a peace budget. We could try to help the teeming poor of the planet. We could reach out to them and give them a chance to share in the wealth of their own energy, their own imagination, and their own physical resources. We have the capacity to do it. Instead, we deal through force, through fear, and through deception. We have to not only turn this country around quickly, because the President of the United States is about to make the most disastrous decision, something that he desperately wants to do. He's obsessed with it. All you got to do is watch what he's been saying for the last 6 months, not what he said last night. And you see that we're preparing for war there and elsewhere. And it'll only bring disaster, as war always has. So let's stand up now and march. March as never before. Let's march as if the life of the nation and the life of those we love the most and the life of the species that we are a part of depended on it, because it may. Thank you.
That was the former Attorney General of the United States, Ramsey Clark. For decades now, he has been a voice for peace. Peace for Vietnam, the Philippines, Chiapas, Yugoslavia, and Iraq. He traveled war zones in these countries while bombs were being dropped. After the Gulf War, he wrote The Fire This Time, which records the reality of this war and describes the war crimes committed by the U.S. government.
You heard my recording of Ramsey Clark's Appeal for Peace on the eve of the U.S. attack on Iraq in March 2003. Ramsey Clark died on April 10, 2021, at the age of 93. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, TUCRadio.org. While you're there, you can subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.
What you just heard was an episode from TUC Radio, Ramsey Clark's Appeal for Peace, Stop the War on Iraq, Let Iraq Live. It was a speech he gave in 2002, warning of another war on Iraq. Millions of Iraqis continue to suffer from that catastrophic war on Iraq that started more than 18 years ago by the United States, based on lies. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.